Because
that's what they do. I wish you could all see Sidge's face at the moment.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Patrons, and welcome to episode 4 of European Week. As we march through, we are moving back from Italy to Belgium. Particular shout out to all the listeners in Europe, whether you may be north, east, west, south, north particularly, because north is where the Scandinavian countries are. And you know, James, that we have much love for all of those in Norway.
Yeah, and also those...
Theon getting all the love this week. You know what? And I haven't even seen him pop up on Twitter, so I don't even know if he's actually listening to any of these pods.
Yeah, of course he is. Also, love out to those in Asia, Oceania, North and South America. We don't know if we've got any South Americans. And Africa, of course.
Indeed.
And Scotland.
And Antarctica. And, you know.
There's definitely no patrons in Antarctica. I suspect it's somewhat colder there at the moment than it is here.
Oh, it's tasty out here, mate.
It's not tasty. It's put your fucking egg on the floor and eat it afterwards, basically. And it's about to get hotter. And us Brits, we just can't deal with hot weather.
Nah.
Which is interesting because... when you go to Belgium, it's a bit like Wales. It never stops raining.
I'm going to Wales next week, and I bet you it doesn't rain.
Have you been to Belgium? You must have been to Belgium.
No.
Shut up. You've never been to Belgium.
I've never been. I want to go Brussels or something like that.
I've been loads of times, but normally as like change of train to go to Germany. But I have been to Brussels as well when Spurs played Anderlecht in the 15-16 season. Did the same as I normally do, book trains and all that. And then Tottenham only got an allocation of 1,100. Couldn't get a ticket. So spent 48 hours in a pub.
I mean, if you think about Belgium as a country, all the things that they're famous for are things that I love. Beer. What?
The EU.
Beer. Chocolate. Waffles. What else is Belgium famous for? Belgian waffles. Belgian chocolate.
I think we can
Belgian
say,
beer.
I put chips in there maybe as well.
Oh, yeah, those Belgian chips, which are famous in Holland. But yeah, the Belgian chips covered in the sauce. Like, what's not to love about Belgium? Kevin De Bruyne.
Kevin De Bruyne. Yeah. Romelu Lukaku. Good afternoon, Gary Mantle.
Company. Eden Hazard.
Okay, so you know plenty about Belgium. This is going to be a little bit different to the previous pods done. Sudge is going to do a lot of research for PSG and Mbappe tomorrow.
I've already started looking into it.
Good man.
Yeah.
I've asked Suj to do no research for this podcast.
I don't understand.
What do you mean you don't understand? I've just said that he's done no research. Every time with you, isn't it, sweetheart?
Well, did you say okay, Google?
What do you know about Belgian domestic football?
Not very much. I don't particularly get the feeling that it's particularly competitive. I know Genk.
Okay.
Club Bruges.
Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, that's it.
Anderlecht?
Yeah, Anderlecht.
There's Gent and Genk, which always confuses me. Okay. It's a nightmare. You can tell anyone, yeah, we're playing Genk. Which one? Standard Liège.
Yeah.
It's a few known teams. Anderlecht. Have won more Belgian titles than anyone else. 34, Club Bruges, 18. The two clearly dominant teams. We have seen a little bit of a swing over the last, well, I'd say this century, where Anderlecht haven't been as dominant as they had been previously. Many of you might know Vincent Kompany was there. Didn't have a great season. They haven't actually won the Belgian title. Since 16-17, Club Bruges have been the more dominant over the last few years, winning the title in 21, 20, 19 was a suspended year. Well, I think 20 was suspended, but they gave it to Bruges, but they didn't have like a final table or anything because they were miles clear. They won it in 18, 16. You've had a few other teams dip in. Standard Liège won it twice in the 2000s. You've also had Genk, that's the one with a K, won it in 2019. And Gent won it in 2015. Anything else you know about Belgian domestic football?
No, I mean, they're a hothouse of amazing talent and have been for the last 10 years, but that's about it.
But only recently, only since the noughties. Belgian, between sort of Italian 90 and then sort of around, obviously, the change of the decade into the 2010s, didn't really have a great national team over those 20 years or so. But and you could argue that the best period's gone now, right? we've said it many times, like that centre-back company, Vertonghen and Alderweireld, it's all gone now, isn't it? Still have great attacking players, obviously. You ever heard of Benelux?
Yes, Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg. Correct. As a kind of, they're all so small, let's group them together.
It's still a muted thought and an idea suggestion that eventually the Dutch and the Belgian leagues might merge.
I mean, Luxembourg's just there to avoid taxes. What else? Did they have even any football teams there?
Yeah, and it's just Benel doesn't work, does it?
No.
Benelux sounds
just
better.
Just get them in there. Okay, yeah.
Fine. What do you know about Royal Union Saint-Gilloise?
Saint-Gilloise. I feel like calling them Saint-Gilet because we love a cheeky little gilet. Nah, I don't know anything. Like, literally nothing. Couldn't tell you anything about
them. You do know something. There's one thing you definitely know.
Their name.
It's good, yeah.
Tell me.
You know about Dennis Undev?
Yes, he signed for Brighton in January and then obviously went back on loan and then he's back. And he's done all right there, from my understanding. I don't know enough about him.
Okay. Royal Union Saint-Gilloise, often abbreviated to USG, which is possibly what I'll use here. It is Union as well. It's the same shit as the Berlin team, which we could probably guess. They are the third most successful team in Belgian football history.
Okay, they have a very long history and were probably successful in the early part of the last century.
Very good. 11 league titles won in 1904, 05, 06, 07, 09, 10, 13, 23, 33, 34 and 35. Their last Belgian league title was won in 1935. Also finished runners-up 9 times, and all of those runners-up positions were prior to 1935. Essentially, prior to the Second World War, they were the most dominant football team in Belgium. Main rivals Anderlecht, who are now the most successful team in Belgian football history. Unionists used to call Anderlecht the elevator because they went up and down so much.
Right.
Anderlecht don't have a name for Union because once it disappeared, they never fucking come back, essentially.
The black hole.
Yeah, I guess so. Union were formed in, I will tell you, 1897, which was 2 years after the formation of the Belgian Football Association, and obviously dominated it for a long time. Originally from a part of Brussels called Saint-Gilles, you can guess, comes from the name, but moved to the municipality of Forest, which is in the south of Brussels, back in the 1920s. And at that point, played at the Stade Joseph Marion Stadium, a stadium which current capacity maximum is 9,400.
Smaller than Bournemouth.
Smaller than Bournemouth, yes. I don't suppose if Tottenham play there next year, I don't suppose I'll be getting the ticket for that one either. That said, they may have to ground share somewhere else. We'll come back onto that. So, years of the doldrums, done nothing. Historical club, dominated pre-Second World War, and absolutely nothing afterwards. Didn't even come back. Wasn't like they came back, got promoted, went down after 3 years, nothing. Been out the top flight.
Do you know how far low they got?
Yeah, the third tier. Okay. But then this is Belgian football. It's not like the English Football League pyramid, for example. Dropped down to the third tier in the 1960s. They dropped down to the second division. So they went down, I think, around about 1965. Hadn't come back until very, very recently. They did have a little bit of European pedigree. Actually got to the Intercity Fairs Cup semi-final and played Roma. That was the tournament that was the predecessor to what would eventually be renamed the UEFA Cup. Back then, the original invitations of the UEFA Cup was only teams from cities, from capital cities. It was an invitational tournament. Anyway, do you know anything about the ownership?
No. But Royal Union, is it owned by a royal family or something like that?
Well, that's an interesting point as well, because Anderlecht, obviously playing purple, this also pisses off USG supporters, because purple is the royal family colour in Belgium. Union playing yellow, primarily yellow and blue, quite a dark yellow. The owner of USG is a current Premier League chairman. Any guesses?
Chairman.
Yep.
Bruce Buck, no.
Nope.
Because he's gone now.
He has gone. Yeah, you're right. In your own time for the audio.
It's not Daniel Levy.
No. Nope.
It's not going to be...
You're thinking too near the top for a start.
Oh, lower league.
No, it's Premier League.
No, so lower half of the Premier League.
Mid-table.
Tony Bloom.
It is.
Which is why the Undev deal happened.
You've got the link there with Undev, potentially. Mm. So, Tony Bloom and his sidekick, Alex Muzio. Tony Bloom is now the owner of USG, bought the football club majority shareholder in 2018. Alex Muzio is the chairman of the football club. Alex Muzio doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. So, did some digging into trying to find out who Alex Muzio is, because we know a lot about Tony Bloom. We know the historical of... gambling stuff, poker, etc. It's worth pointing out at this stage, Union are not a part of Brighton. They're two completely separate entities. We're not talking about like the City Group or anything like that. The two clubs are not related. They obviously do have a relationship because of like Undev. They played each other last week in a preseason friendly and Neil Morpay wanted to have fights. That's genuinely true as well. So... Tony Bloom and Alex Muzio identified in the mid-2010s that they wanted to buy a football club and wanted to search through Europe. And they obviously started thinking about the top five European leagues. But also
Did he own Brighton at this time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did Brighton come up? 16, maybe? I might have the year wrong. It's probably... Actually, no, it's probably later than that. 17, maybe. Anyway... So, but what they wanted essentially was they didn't just want to buy a football club that was going to make them loads of money. Tony Bloom is obviously very happy with what he's doing with Brighton, progressing the football club. He obviously very much cares about it. I mean, he saved that football club from ruins in the 1990s. But realistically, Brighton and Hove Albion are probably never going to win the Premier League. Sorry, Seagulls fans. What they wanted to do was invest in and buy a football club to win a top division title in Europe. This was more of a play thing, but you haven't got billions of pounds to do it, but they wanted to try and buy a football team and make it competitive and make it grow. So they looked at the top five European leagues. Now, of course, when you're looking around them, what are you going to do? You're going to buy a small club in Germany and compete with Bayern Munich?
Nah. I mean,
you rule this sort of shit out. So what they looked at primarily was they looked at three leagues, Belgium, Holland, and Portugal. And Alex Muzio speaks about this quite a lot. It's a podcast worth finding on Belgian Football Podcast. It just gives you a little bit of insight into him. It's the only thing really I can find about him is from that podcast. He identified the problem with Portugal was the difference between the big three, if you will, Benfica, Porto and Sporting Lisbon, to then the smaller clubs, which they were more targeting, was like the gulf is just too massive. And actually, in Holland, it's a similar story. You've got Ajax, PSV, Feyenoord. Now, in Belgium... You've had dominant teams like Anderlecht and Bruges and Standard Liège at different times. Genk and Ghent have done quite well recently and stuff. But what they identified was that in Muzio's opinion was that the lower ranked teams in Belgium were actually of a better quality than the similar counterparts in Holland and Portugal. Their belief would be that the team that's 14th in Belgium would beat the team that's 14th in Holland and 14th in Portugal. Now, I don't have a way of particularly proving that to you. I don't watch a lot of lower league teams or, say, lower division teams from these countries. But there is certainly a more competitive nature to the Belgian league where we've had several different champions over the last decade or so. And they identified that if they were to buy a second division team from one of these three countries, then it was easiest to get a team in Belgium towards the top. So Union came about because a number of reasons. One, it had a little bit of history. Although it's obviously very old, it does have history. Mm-hmm. It represents a name, although probably until the last couple of years, I'd guess that unless you're familiar with the football in that country, most of you probably never heard of them. Until 6 months ago, I'd never heard of them and then started following the story. So anyway, 2018, Tony Bloom buys USG. Alex Muzio becomes chairman. And obviously, you can tell by the size of the stadium. It's a listed building, by the way. Can't do nothing with it. like the whole site. They cannot change anything with this stadium. And it's why eventually they're going to have to look at move and getting a new stadium. Not a pot to piss in. You imagine what the financial levels are like in the second league in Belgium. It's not. It's, yeah, you're talking about free transfers and stuff, right? But they obviously want it to be progressive. The difficulty of getting out the Belgian second division is only one team automatically goes up. And the teams in like second and third play, I mean, it's like 16th and 17th in Belgium in a playoff system. Anyway, they improve. They make some shrewd free transfer signings. Undev, for example, came in on a free transfer in 2020 from a third division team in Germany. And has obviously done really well and has obviously now got the football club a little bit of money. He's moved on to Brighton, etc. 2020-2021, game changer. They win the league. They don't just win the league. They absolutely destroy it, mate. 22 wins from 28 games. Goal difference of plus 45. They finish 18 points clear of a team called Serang, who finished second but did actually come up with them. So they managed to get this team into the first division of the Belgium, which is known as Belgian 1A or Jupiter Pro League is a name a lot of people have heard about it. So they come up and you think, right, consolidate. Can you keep it up? Basically, the most difficult thing is to get up. But then if you think about what Muzio said, the league's competitive, right? The team who's 14th could in theory beat the team that's top, etc., etc. So come up, their only goal is to increase the size of the squad, get a few players in and more familiar with that level, and stay up, essentially. Mm-hmm. The sort of players we're talking about and buying, they bought a player called Christian Burgess. Well, I say bought, free transfer, like many of their signings, yep, from Portsmouth.
Okay.
This is the sort of quality type of player that we're talking about here, okay? They start their season, game week one, Anderlecht, the big noisy neighbour. Anderlecht away, game week one. The royal enemy who they haven't played in a league game for 50-odd years or so. And they go there, and they beat them 3-1. Oof. Nice start.
Yeah, yeah.
This is one of them where, is, you know, like Bournemouth starting the Premier League this year? Or was it when Norwich come up last year? Wasn't it like Liverpool, Man City first two? At game two, they've got Club Bruges.
Yeah.
Then they get beat. It's not all glory, this story. They have a good little run. They win the next couple. They lose to Mechelen in game five. Game six, they play Standard Liège, well-known team. They beat them 4-0 at home. They're doing really well to the extent that after they beat Serang, the team that they come up with in game week 11, beat them 4-2 at home, they go top of the league. They come into the Christmas period, still top, and have a succession of games against the well-established teams in Belgium. So they play Ghent, game week 21, home, 0-0 draw. They play Serang again away from home, they win 4-0. Genk at home, game week 23, they win 2-1. The reverse against Bruges, 0-0 away. And they play Anderlecht at home again. They beat them again, 1-0. And then Antwerp, Royal Antwerp, who mm-hmm. Tottenham played in Europe, but beat us. They go to Antwerp and they win 2-0. They're well clear. You look at their run-in, it's there. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the point where the whole media across Europe's looking at it going, this is a Leicester City fairy tale.
Yeah, not even, because these have just come up. I mean, Leicester had a season in the Premier League before they've been up.
Well, Leicester were bang to rights relegated in their first season, yeah, but I think they won 7, drew 2 and lost 1 of their last 10 games,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah.
So they're going to win the league. Then they play St Trinian at home, 13th in the league. They lose 1-0. Their last big game on paper is Charleroi away, is their next fixture. It's the only game left that looks tough. They go to Charleroi and they win 3-0. They've recovered from the setback. They don't lose another game. And they finish top.
Wow.
Beautiful story, right?
How many points?
Well clear, mate. Well clear. I'll tell you, bear with me a second. They finished on 77 points with a total record of 124, drawn 5, lost 5.
That's a good season.
Goal difference, plus 51. 77 points, a well clear of 2 points per game. And this is a 34-game season. Brilliant stuff, mate. Finished first. First season back for 50 years. What a romantic story.
Wow.
You think I'm going to end the podcast there?
No, there's got to be a but. I can tell there's a but. But coming.
except they're not champions.
Right.
So in Belgium, they have this really weird fucked up thing. So the league season finishes, it's 34 games gone. Union finished on 77 points. There was some debate for a while in terms of whether it would be 75 or 77 because their final game against Bierschot, who had already been relegated, was actually abandoned at 0-0 with 8 minutes to go because Bierschot, their fans, this is in USG's ground, decide to invade the pitch and want to go and fight everyone. Game gets abandoned. They didn't know if USG were going to be awarded the points or not. They did get awarded the points. So, 77 points, clear. They finished, I will tell you, 5 points clear of Club Brugge. They've won it comfortably. Now the Belgian FA decide they're going to half everyone's fucking points.
Because?
Because that's what they do. I wish you could all see Sidge's face at the moment.
So everyone just gets halved?
Correct.
You still win the league.
Yeah, but now you've got to play everyone again.
Why?
So what they do in Belgium... and anybody who's ever said, well, why don't we have Champions League playoffs in England and stuff? You're going to realise this shit's bizarre. So they half everybody's points. And the top four all play each other again. So from 77 points, what they do is you half that, right? So half of that is what, 38 and a half?
Yeah.
Right, but they round it up. So they go half and then they round it up. And so they give them 39 points. Bruges, 72, you can drop that right in half.
36.
And the teams in third and fourth, Anderlecht and Antwerp, finished on 64 and 63 points respectively. 32 points for each of them. You now have a six-game league. Bruges have got, USG have got a three-point advantage over Bruges. For Anderlecht or Antwerp, it's very tough. But technically, any one of these four teams can still win the league. They start from there. New four-team six-game league, like a Champions League group
every
stage.
Every year?
Yeah, they do this every year.
Okay.
Yeah, listen, this is confusing as fuck. I'm doing my best to explain this.
I get it.
By the way,
stupid.
The team that finishes bottom of this then goes into another playoff for like Europa League place or something with like fifth, sixth and seventh. It's mad. Look into it and read it and you won't understand it any better. So let's go with the simplistic. The top four play each other again and Union start with this three-point advantage over Bruges. Despite the fact they've won the league. Won the league by 5 points, and then they've got to play them all again. They've only got a three-point advantage. What are you thinking of this so far?
I don't know why. Why is my running question?
It's to add drama to the end of the season. And what do they do in the playoff?
Piss it up.
They start with Anderlecht again. They beat them 3-1.
Oh.
Antwerp away, 0-0. They're still in pole. Bruges at home, third game. They get a penalty. Miss it. Bruges score twice in the last 15 minutes. Bruges beat them 2-0. Then they go for the return. 0-0 away to Bruges. Have a player sent off. Lose 1-0. Bruges go ahead of them. Final two games, they beat Anderlecht again. But then it was already gone. Bruges had done the business in all their games. They lost 1-0 to Antwerp. And so Bruges, despite finishing 5 points behind USG, were the champions.
That's a shit end to the story.
It's crap, isn't it?
Shit. I don't understand why you would need that. In a league...
So she's proper upset.
Yeah, man. is it... look, if there was a situation where one team's forever winning the league and you want to add drama to the end, then yeah, go for it. A fewer teams in a knockout-style shootout, yeah, sure, I get it. But 34-game season, you don't need that. In a league where regularly get different champions.
Of course you don't.
Are they redressing this now? Are they thinking of scrapping it?
Possibly. But like, if you search for what Belgian football fans talk about it and stuff, like even they don't really understand what's going on. I mean, the concept of even...
There
the
must
half,
be a reason why they...
The concept of even halving the points.
Yeah.
I could almost live with it a little bit if USG had kept a five-point advantage and they went, all right, go again as an extension to the season.
Yeah.
But you won the league by 5 points and you're saying you've got to do this and you've only got a three-point advantage. What was the point of getting a five-point advantage?
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really harsh. So the manager, who done really well, I'm going to forget his name now. I'm going to have to go and look for it. He's leaving. He's decided to up and go to Anderlecht. Oh, what was his name? It's going to kill me, Suge. Felice Mazou. is the guy who was the manager. He's left to go to Anderlecht, presumably to get a bit more money. And his assistant, Kirill Gerats, is going to take over the team. Now, you want to know if they're playing the Champions League next year, right?
I doubt it.
Well, Bruges automatically go in. The winners of the Belgian League, I think it's 7th or 8th ranked, and I don't know if it's changed because of what's happened in Russia and Ukraine, automatically goes in to the Champions League. Obviously, have a really low coefficient, so Bruges go into pot 4. So, USG did still finish 2nd in this overall extended 40-game season. They go into the 3rd qualifying round of the Champions League. Now, their stadium, in that interview that Muzio did, is back in February. Obviously, at that point, they're aware that if they win the league, they're going straight in the Champions League. No chance can they use this stadium in the Champions League. Like, Muzio even himself, he's like, look, the people love it and stuff. It's a great atmosphere. It's real community and stuff, but...
It's not Champions League.
No. And as I said, because the whole area is listed, apparently there's even a view which you can overlook or something to look into the stadium, even that's protected or something wild. They can't do anything with it. So they are looking at sites locally to build a new stadium. We're very conscious of their history, and they're saying, like, because they can't knock the stadium down or sell it into flats or anything like that, that they'll let, like, the women's and the youth teams still play there, and they'll go there and have, a pre-season game and have a party at the old stadium and stuff like that. Obviously, if you're looking to be serious, they need to grow, right? It's 9,000 to maximum capacity. Not that these Belgian clubs get massive. I referenced Anderlecht. I mean, it only holds about 22,000 or something. This is one of the bigger ones. But a few of the other clubs, like Genk, you don't know which one I said, they've rebuilt their stadium very recently. You played them, didn't you? Which one was it?
With a K.
Was it?
Yeah.
One of them beat us in Europe, and I always forget which one it was, honestly. Yeah. One of them knocked us out. So they go into the 3rd qualifying round. They could yet get into the Champions League, which would be...
You in the 3rd qualifying round.
Us?
Yeah.
And we go straight in, mate.
The coefficient's all right.
So, by the way, the 3rd qualifying round's not the last qualifier. You've got the 3rd qualifier, then you've got the playoff.
Oh, okay. But you go straight to the group?
Yeah.
I thought 4th was...
They stopped that years ago to keep the big 5 leagues happy. So from the big 5 leagues, they don't have qualifiers anymore. They go straight in. There's some bad news. So they're going to go through the league path of qualifying, which is more difficult than the champions path. So the champions path, you might get the champions of Sweden, the champions of Denmark. In the league path, you can get teams from Holland, Portugal, stuff like that. I can tell you that in the 3rd qualifying round, they will play one of Benfica, Rangers, PSV Eindhoven, or the winner of a 2nd qualifying match between Dynamo Kiev and Fenerbahce. Should they win it, they'll probably then need to beat another one of those teams to qualify. And one of the teams that's unseeded in the first part of the draw is Monaco. The chance of them beating two of these teams are really fucking small. They've already kind of had their...
They're going to UEFA. Europa League.
They will go into something. They will go into some form of European competition. Even if they lose
twice, we might get them in the Conference League or something.
They will go into something. So I think what will happen is, if they lose the first one, I think they go into the Europa League playoff. If they win that, they get to the Europa League group stage. If they lose that, they go into the Conference League. That's my understanding of how it will work. So you could play these. And if you did, I'd imagine, and I'm not sure how well this will go down, but I imagine they would probably play at Anderlecht Stadium.
Nice.
I can't believe they would... I don't know who would decide, whether UEFA would decide, because I'm not sure. It's quite heated between the two clubs, even though they haven't played each other. The fact that USG have obviously...
They don't have a national stadium there.
They do in Brussels, yeah. It's got an athletics track and stuff. But
still.
It holds about 50,000 or so. It did have a renovation in the early 2000s.
I mean, if it depends how many tickets they'd be willing to give us. I reckon if we'd sell a couple of thousand comfortably.
Mate, if you played there in the Conference League you knew it was going to be in a big stadium, you'd take 10,000, mate.
Easy, because it's a Eurostar straight
but
return.
But then it's still empty. They would probably maybe take 10, 15,000 of their own. You wouldn't fill the 50,000.
No, but you might as well make some money off us.
Yeah, but then they would probably play all their group games at the same place. So it's all right saying, "Oh, you'd take 10,000," or even if they did make it in the, if they did get to the Champions League, they would maybe play at the big national stadium.
Big
but in Europa League or the Conference League, can't see it. I think that would be very, very unlikely. That's the story of Royal Union Saint-Gilloise.
I feel like the story is not done yet. I feel like one of us is going to have to play them at some point this season. After all that.
Well, I think the story will progress in the sense that it'll be interesting to see what they do and how it will change them. Obviously, if they did get in the Champions League, then you're looking at a different profile player. One of the things I should have said that they really liked about investing into a Belgian football club was there's no restrictions on players. So, like, how many times have you seen it where it's like, Arsenal have done this a few times, and Man City, you buy a player from Brazil, you're not going to get a work permit, they get fucking sent to Belgium. That happens a lot. So it's one of the reasons. So if they got to the Champions League, you could probably bet they're going to buy 4 or 5 Brazilians or something. 1-2 year contract. Yeah, sell on clause, 5 million. You can go afterwards or something. So it'll be interesting to see how the model changes. And because there's not a dominant force in Belgium, maybe they will establish themselves as a regular name we hear about in the next few years. Tony Bloom's not a joker. Like he's invested in this football club genuinely with the vision of making it champions of Belgium. But then if they do become champions of Belgium, which they've obviously, what was he going to do if they'd won it this year? Go, that was fun. Sell it. No. They've got a project now to reinvest the football club, keep the community together, build a brand new stadium. This might not end.
Nice.
They might become a regular established name that we hear a lot about.
Look forward to it. That was very interesting. Patrons, hope you enjoyed it. Do kind of give James some plaudits and love on the old Slack if you did enjoy it. We'll be back tomorrow looking at the most expensive contract in football from a salary point of view with Kylian Mbappe staying with PSG. The whole saga, will he, won't he go to Real Madrid?
Well, he was always going.
What, to Real Madrid?
It wasn't a doubt in my mind that he was going to Real Madrid.
We'll talk about it tomorrow.
We'll talk about it tomorrow. But
we can talk about the season before last with the shadow boxing with 160 million euro offer, which got rejected. Would that have been sensible to take and so on? So stay tuned for that. Ask James midday on the main YouTube channel if you've got any FPL related questions.
Or none.
Other than that, stay safe. Ciao, ciao.
Thanks, patrons. Cue music, please, man child.